Hello and welcome to the return of the Rendcore Pit. It has been a long time, and no, that was not the Rendcore in the background.
Although I smell like one sometimes.
Oh, I see. Howling from his cage. That was actually, though, howling from his cage, not the Rendcore, but none other than Eddie Medina, DFW area artist and great friend of a great many shows that I'm part of. Eddie, welcome to the Rendcore Pit.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and really, really ready to delve deeply into the mythos of Star Wars.
And that really underscores what we're doing here, because if you happen to have some vague memory of this title being bandied about the JCU before, it was kind of the core concept originally with the Rendcore Pit was just going to be me rambling on about all things Star Wars. I figured I could probably get away with that for a while. Lord knows I can talk about Star Wars all day long. And in fact, I recently, in looking in my old emails to try to find some preliminary stuff I'd written for this show, for this reincarnation of the Rendcore Pit, as it were, I found actually I'd written a schedule of three more episodes of the Rendcore Pit with me just yammering on about things. Apparently, the third one was to be Life Day Revisited.
Oh.
So, you know, the thing about it is, somewhere in the back of my mind, it always bothered me that I just never got around to it. And of course, when Disney bought Lucasfilm, here's the perfect jumping off point for the Rendcore Pit.
Yeah.
I can
yeah.
bring it back.
Well, you know, it's a lot like doing a solo podcast is a lot like working out. If you're, unless you're really, really dedicated or maniacal and psychotic, working out, you really kind of have to have a buddy to keep you on task and to keep you, you know, going to the gym and, you know,
that
working
is simultaneously
out.
A good corollary and the most depressing thing, because now I feel like I bought a membership to the gym and only went twice. But thankfully, I was keeping myself busy with other things.
Exactly.
That's not going to stick for very long. So, needless to say, with Eddie's presence here, what we're trying to get at is, in much the same vein as Hey Kids Comics, the Rendcore Pit is now going to become, we're literally starting over from scratch, and it's going to be a show in that sort of vein where it's going to be myself. Eddie is my co-host now from here on out until we just stop podcasting or he tires of this, whichever comes first.
Or the crowds demand I leave the show.
Sorry, I thought this was Eddie Medina, not Bobby Blakey.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't have two of you like this.
Okay.
This can't work. So, again, welcome. Eddie, I was sitting around one day, as I often am, pondering all these different things that I wanted to do, and it occurred to me that there's a way I can bring the Rendcore Pit back. I've been kicking around the idea for a couple of months, and my initial thought is I'll just bring a guest on to the first one. I'll bring a different guest on to the second one, and I'll just kind of rotate people through until I figure out who's going to make a good co-host.
Yeah.
I'll sort of have everybody's a guest is secretly auditioning. They just don't know it. And then I thought, okay, I need to get this going. And I was thinking about some conversations that Eddie and I had. And I thought, okay, number one, Eddie obviously is very familiar with Star Wars, has some history with Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some engaging conversations. And number two, stop being stupid. Eddie is the obvious choice for co-host.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I kind of knew it in the back of my head. I thought, okay, why force myself to force other people to audition without knowing it? When, you know, right there is somebody who not only, God bless you, listens to the podcast that I'm on, which, you know, that's one of the really amazing things is every now and then you're like, wow, you know, I actually get to hear from someone who listens on a fairly regular basis that they enjoy these things. But in all seriousness, the more I thought about it, just having had a chance recently a few times to just talk things in general and Star Wars being very strong among them, who better? You've been on some of these podcasts now. You've got a feel for it. You've done some podcasting before. So I don't have to kind of the initial awkwardness other than me finding no good way to articulate all this. To get things going here, this is the new Rendcore Pit, as I said, and we are talking in this episode what better place to begin than literally at the beginning? So we are going to talk about Star Wars, when Star Wars meant one single movie in 1977 called Star Wars.
And not A New Hope.
Yeah, before it became A New Hope, before it became, or at least around the time it became, it was a fledgling cultural phenomenon. I don't think many realized precisely how far this would go.
No. And even you know, you hear now, and of course, hindsight's 2020, you hear now some people like to claim, well, I knew it was going to take off, and I knew it was going to be like the next big thing. But, you know, to hear the actors talk about their experience on the set now, a lot of them just said they had no idea what kind of movie they were making. They had no idea this would have the lasting impression that it did.
Absolutely. I think apart from reportedly, I've never really researched the veracity of this, but I remember hearing years ago that Sir Alec Guinness, part of his fee for the film, took a percentage.
Yeah.
It's possible. I think, you know, a lot of people have equated that to mean he had an idea this was going to be a bigger gold mine.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I, you know, the more I learn about the film industry, I think it might have been more like, you know, somebody like Brad Pitt, who gets paid they back three truckloads of cash up to his house.
Yeah.
For a major part. Will show up in these little indie films, or any number of really big name actors will show up in these little indie films, oftentimes for less than the fee that they could normally command elsewhere, because they just really fall in love with the script or production.
Exactly.
Or, you know, some even do things for scale.
Yeah.
Just to be part of something. And I can't help but wonder if it's just sort of like, oh, look, your little space thing, I'll be in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just do it. Tell you what, why don't you give me a percentage? That way you can save yourself some money.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that there's a good possibility it was one of that. It was almost more of a conceit where it turned out to be a rather shrewd conceit.
I like to think that
it would be kind of a surprise. Like, I never would have asked the kind of truckloads of money I'm getting out of this turkey.
Exactly. I like to think, because he was a smart guy. He was sharp. I like to think he read the material and knew there was something there. He knew that there was something special there and wanted to be a part of it. That's just me.
Well, the thing about it is, you know, you're talking about a period where they weren't backing the truckloads of money up to actors' houses, no matter how prestigious.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
They were like maybe a van load, but not the big semi-trailers of today, by adjusted value of the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're probably right that at least realize that maybe there could be more money out of this, because it has some potential. And obviously, you never got a chance to see the initial scripts, which years later I've read about some of the stuff that was in the first draft. You're thinking, no, thank goodness that didn't get shot.
You know, just on that note, I haven't checked it out yet, but apparently Dark Horse is putting out a comic book adaptation of that actual script.
Absolutely. It's called The Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Facebook. It started out as The Facebook.
The Facebook.
Same sort of idea there. They dropped the and of course made drastic sweeping changes on top of that. But yeah, I think that's a really, really cool thing. I've been meaning to try to get my hands on the first one. The first comic shop I went to didn't have it, and I haven't got around to trying to look for that. But we're gonna jump in the Wayback Machine, Shaman.
All right, let's go.
Golly, Mr. Peabody, we're gonna go back to 1977.
You love those obscure references.
I do indeed, because I want other people to feel the pain of being mentally burdened by things that nobody remembers or cares about.
Oh, wow.
Next week, Fractured Fairy Tales. But we're going
there you
to,
go.
We're going to literally go back on this episode and look at only Star Wars as it existed back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was like back then. And this is another thing where, like, the age difference between myself and my co-host is a tremendous boon, because we bring a lot of things to the table. I've spent about the last 6 or 7 years droning on here or there on between 4 and 6 different podcasts that I can think of, either a single episode or ad nauseum, about my experiences. So I'm going to actually let you take the floor for a little while.
Okay.
And Cher, in 1977, how old were you when this that summer?
I was 4. I was 4 years old, and it's exciting to talk about because Star Wars.
Oh, excited about Star Wars. I can't remember 4 being an exciting age, but sure.
Star Wars was actually my very first movie experience, at least the first one I can remember. I was just at that age where going to the movies, I was old enough to understand what was going on the screen and take it in. And boy, I tell you what, I'm sure like so many people just fell in love with it from the get-go. I mean, the characters, the environments they inhabited, the story, the pure adventure aspect of the story was just, it just blew me away. And seeing it repeatedly, which, you know, was a big deal because I can't imagine, you know, my parents, you know, they weren't the type that we grew up in a very frugal family. And so I can't imagine, unless they just knew that my brother Vic and I just were in love with this movie, spending that money to see a movie and, you know, paying to go see a movie in the theater over and over again. But I was just so in love with that movie. I saw it repeatedly and told you this story before, Cole, that, you know, through 77, 78, I probably saw it a good 3 or 4 times.
Well, you know, interesting, seeing that movie repeatedly, not only just from a standpoint of frugality,
mm-hmm.
it was almost unheard of to go see a movie a second time.
Exactly. Exactly.
And definitely unheard of to go 4, 5, or 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I remember, like, my mom reading showing the newspaper article, this guy proudly proclaimed to have seen Star Wars 100 times.
Yeah. I remember
that's like $300.
Yeah. But I remember that was a big deal. I remember hearing that in the news where it was such a newsworthy item that, you know, people, it was almost like a competition with who could see Star Wars the most.
I know. At that point, I'd seen Day of the Animals twice, and that was about it.
Oh my gosh, David. I'm still looking for that DVD. So if anybody has a inside track on how to obtain a copy of that movie, let me know. But I'll tell you what, you know, so between 77 and 78, we had already seen Star Wars 3 or 4 times. So, you know.
I want to point out that Star Wars, by the way, that phenomenon just really wiped out Eraserhead at the cinema.
Is that what it played against?
Really, you know, poor David Lynch. That was his big chance. He thought, you know, what am I up against? A space movie? What the?
Wow.
And for those of you who know more about film than I do, I know solely that Eraserhead came out in 77. I did not research to see if it actually came out the same weekend.
Oh, okay, okay. Wow. I'd like to know what came out that weekend.
I would, too. I mean, I know, you know, I think it was back then, that was when you could literally, like, drop the kids off at any age at the movie and go away.
Mm-hmm.
And come back in a couple hours and collect them, and they'd still be there.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure a lot of kids of varying ages were next door enjoying Star Wars while Mom and Dad were at Annie Hall.
Yeah.
Little wonder that got Best Picture that year.
Yeah, exactly. So by the time we had seen it multiple times, we were so familiar with the story and familiar with the lines. And of course, for viewers who may be even younger than I, like back then, it was such a big phenomenon that it wasn't really heard of for a movie to be re-released year after year. Is that right, Cole? I mean, because this preceded Beta and VHS, so it's not like you could just own it on tape.
I'm not that familiar with how nationally and regionally, et cetera, the release was.
Mm-hmm.
I was more aware, of course, of The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. Well, there's a poster that, once it did get re-released the next following year, it's a birthday cake, and it's a one-year birthday to cake.
Oh, yes. You don't have to remind me of what I thought was the crappiest poster ever for Star Wars. I remember seeing the newspaper. You're looking through the movie section, and here's this great big ad and this birthday cake with a Star Wars logo and a single candle coming out of it, and the 12 Kenner Star Wars figures that existed at that point circling the cake,
which is the only interesting thing about it for a collector was the figures.
1 year old today, and I thought, you know, that couldn't be less exciting. Though, ironically, many years later, when Catherine and I were running our little weekend mall shop, a piece of the Action Collectibles, when we hit our 1 year anniversary, I was trying to get the idiots at the grocery store bakery to understand what I wanted. and having a cake that was decorated simply with our logo on it. And then I was going to surround it with all kinds of different action figures and take a photo of it and do a little one-year-old today thing, and it just panned out.
Little homage to that crappy poster. Exactly. Oh, wow. Okay, so...
So needless to say, my opinion of that poster changed drastically with age.
Yeah, go Google that, anybody who's interested. But so Vic and I had already seen it multiple times, and we were familiar with the story, familiar with the lines. We can, you know, at the age of five at that point, could really grasp the whole story and the concepts and everything. So my aunt and uncle, who spoke both English and Spanish, came into town, and they knew Vic and I were just massive Star Wars fans. I mean, we had the T-shirts and everything. And back then, that was a big deal. That's when you knew you were a fan, because you actually had the T-shirt.
You had some paraphernalia to back it up.
There you go. So they're just like, okay, well, you know, they told my parents, well, we've been wanting to see Star Wars and see what all the hype is about. So yeah, we know the boys really like it, so why don't we just take them with us to the drive-in theater? Youngsters out there, go Google drive-in theaters if you don't know what that is.
But anytime that gets mentioned on any of these shows, we do have to stop and point out that that was actually a thing.
Yeah, hashtag vintage. Anyway, so go with our aunt and uncle to the drive-in theater. Well, lo and behold, they go to see Star Wars in Spanish, which Vic and I do not speak Spanish. But the funny thing is we had already seen the movie so many times at that point that we actually could follow along, even though it was in a different language. And we were sitting back there to ourselves, like one time Vic would be reciting the Vader lines and I would be reciting the Han Solo lines and back and forth. And so it was like,
they were just like self-dubbing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just a hilarious story to me. And I'm glad you were able to, you know, have a venue to tell that, because I think it's just brilliant. Because, you know, you literally could just, like, turn the sound off if you wanted to. And just go for it, and almost without ever having to, you know, you could probably recite verbatim almost without a single error.
Yeah.
Every single line.
Yeah. It was like a Godzilla movie, and we were trying to get in sync with their mouth moving, and it didn't work so well. But that's okay.
Well, it's only that point, you just start overdubbing like some sort of, you just sort of add your own lines.
Yeah.
Just makes it more fun.
Cole, what's your earliest memory of Star Wars?
Well, as I said, you know, the neat thing is that there are those who'll be like, oh, I've heard this before. And ideally a greater number who will not have heard this story once or five times or what have you.
Yeah.
And that's rather why we mentioned that, you know, by The Empire Strikes Back, I was a little more aware of how films were being released.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've often said, unlike today, where a big new movie comes out, like, say, in November when Thor comes out, it's going to release at every theater that's going to carry it except the dollar movie simultaneously, no matter where you are.
Yeah.
Somebody somewhere is going to have it. But back then, back in the 70s and 80s, distribution was not that big. And you could be in a major metropolitan area and a film of the size and scale of some of these movies wouldn't be playing everywhere. Oftentimes, and you know, I think I grew up in the Dallas area, and you didn't always have everything apparently coming out all at the same place.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. In fact, I remember it may have been Jaws or one of those movies where I remember or maybe Grease, where we actually had to drive quite a ways to actually find a theater that actually was showing.
Absolutely, yes. Showing you just didn't have every single theater. And what's odd is I don't recall there being that many movies. But I think a lot of stuff stayed in the theater longer.
And
oftentimes something stayed, like, say, longer than 3 weeks. I remember every now and again you see a commercial, you know, held over for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would never hear that today. Nobody would go out of their way to tell you, held over? What does that even mean anymore? Nothing.
Yeah.
You know, but back then it had significance. So Star Wars had come out. And for me, it's odd for me to say this, it was a very quiet phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, as I often say on some things, I've heard tell of that. You know, I'd heard of Star Wars, but I can't say that anything had ever... I was really back then, it was Godzilla. I browbeat my parents till I got to go see it. You might go see Clint Eastwood and Every Which Way But Loose before you...
Yeah, or a Sinbad movie. Oh,
yeah, Sinbad. Exactly. I would go see Sinbad or those god-awful Samuel Z. Arkoff films. With giant Gila monsters and stuff. And, of course, Day of the Animals. But...
Here we go. Right.
So, you know, you eventually... We did get to go see Star Wars. I remember at that point, as I've often said, that my earliest memory of Star Wars was sitting around with the family and that coming up in conversation and my older brother saying, oh yeah, a friend of mine saw that and said there's never a dull moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a pretty good endorsement for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because at that point, I think the only PG movie Clay had ever seen was The Spikes Gang. And mm-hmm. I don't even know what that movie is. I just know that was the first PG-rated movie he was ever allowed to go see.
Yeah.
So Google Spikes Gang and let us know what that was all about. I could probably ask my brother, but I'm not going to. He may not even remember this. But we were going on this long car trip from Texas to Pennsylvania with multiple stops along the way. And the first night we were in Nashville, Tennessee. The only time I've ever been in Nashville, the only thing I've ever done in Nashville was eat at a restaurant, stay in a hotel, and see Star Wars.
Yeah.
And the apocryphal story is this really was genuinely at a two-screen movie theater. Yes, they had them back then. And mm-hmm. I think, Eddie, you would probably remember the Wynwood.
Oh, yeah. Wynwood Theater.
Yeah.
That was... You talk about the convenience of a movie theater back in the day. Our parents would drop us off at the Wynwood Theater, go shopping at Montgomery Ward's, come back 2 hours later and pick us up.
Wow, Montgomery Ward's. Indeed. Yeah. I just had this flash vision of that Montgomery Ward building there at the Wynwood Village.
Sadly, no longer there, but well.
Like most of the structure is still there, but none of the anything that was ever there back then. But we would, you know, they actually did have two-screen movie theaters back then. And my apocryphal joke has always been that I always tell people, you know, we got there to the movie theater and they were showing Star Wars and Warriors. So naturally we went to see Warriors. Hey, kids, what'd you think? Well, but I think someone has pointed out to me since that Warriors came out in 78 or something like that. I'm not going to double check that, but I couldn't honestly. There was actually a poster for Warriors. It may have even come out earlier that year or the year before, for all I know.
Ricketers, if you're listening to this, that's your job. That's go right. find go, out when Warriors
Google
came
that
out.
For us, would you?
Yeah, get back to us.
But we, whatever it was, you know, here, hey, they're showing that Star Wars movie, so we all went over to see Star Wars. And, you know, I often say, you know, I don't think there was this great epiphany that my life had changed. That would come later.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just, I think up to that point I had never known cinema before Star Wars, because this was the first time someone had done everything right. We'd gone to see things like Sinbad movies, and we'd gone to see some sci-fi back in the day. But what you never had prior to that, I think this was, and I've often said this, the greatest strength of Star Wars comes from two things, and this is one of them, is that immersive world.
Mm-hmm.
The second you're at ground level, as it were, you're immersed in a world that is full of life and things, and there are people and robots, and I deliberately said robot because I know they're droids, kids. I'm not that old either. But
we're just not allowed to say droids on the show, because Lucasfilm
Disney bought
owns the trademark. Yeah, it's trademark.
No, you said it again.
We'll have to cut that out.
This is like the night you say me all of a sudden. I said it again. But you know, at that point. At that moment, they were robots. Later in the movie, they turned into droid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important distinction there. Because up to somewhere in the first act, in the vernacular, droid did not exist. Oddly enough, android did, if you watched, you know, The Lost Saucer.
But, yeah.
You know, nobody thought to shorten it. So we go to see this, and all of a sudden, it's like the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. It just, nothing had ever been quite like this. So needless to say, it wasn't like the next stop, we got to find a movie theater, I got to see me some more Star Wars. But I think it was just sort of like, you know, once we got back home and things were settling down, and it was like, okay, we're going to go see, I want to go see this movie again. And other people would want to go see it who had or hadn't. And, And pretty soon there were this small group who were as hooked as I was. And, you know, then you would start hearing, okay, I'm not that strange that I've seen it five times. This guy in California has seen it 100. I need to go see it a sixth and seventh time. And so the following year, I was actually in Louisiana visiting a friend who lived in our neighborhood back when in 77. And we went to go see, it's back in the theater. We went to the AIDS screener.
It was a big deal.
And, I'd never seen an eight screen theater before and went and saw it there. And that's where I saw the crappy birthday party poster in person for the first time.
Now I know what to get you for Christmas. I'm going to find that sucker.
So that it was an interesting time back then, because there's a lot of things you don't think about even when you reminisce about, you know, like I just mentioned, the concept of here are robots that now you just, if you describe that scene, that first where the crew members, the rebels, are being herded down the hall, at the beginning of that shot, there's a droid in front of them. That just adds this element. What is it there? It doesn't matter. It's gone. It's over. It's not part of the story. But you recognize that it's a variation on R2-D2 who you've met. That all of a sudden, somewhere along the lines, these robots forever become droids. And you forget there was ever a moment in the back of your mind they were just robots.
Yes.
And I think that is another of the really great strengths, is there was so much added to the vernacular in this one movie.
Yeah, you're right. It was just so immersive. It's like you see Star Wars, and even my, at the time, 4 or 5 year old brain could comprehend that. You felt like this was literally a slice of a larger universe, even though at the time we never knew that there was going to be more of a universe to come.
Exactly.
You just knew. It literally felt like this one story was grabbed a hold of and lifted out of a greater story. And I think that's one of the strengths even today of that movie.
Well, the other thing is there was this sort of brilliant built-in history that you never got to experience. And that's one thing oftentimes is lacking in a lot of movies. They feel like they have to do this whole big 15-minute exposition scene to set everything up.
Yeah.
In a few sentences, Obi-Wan Kenobi explains the entire history up to this point. And it works because your mind can fill all that in. I think people just... Either people are or simply perceived as being stupid and needing to be spoon-fed everything. And I think the most intelligent filmmaking is the filmmaking that gives the audience the benefit of the doubt.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, this was a point where, in a way, in addition to being immersive, this was science fiction cinema growing up. And what I mean by that is we graduate in this film in a very beautifully subtle way from the idea that sci-fi weaponry has to look very Victorian, in a sense. You know, you didn't have the Tesla coil ray gun.
Tesla coil ray gun.
and I realize that the device I'm thinking of, the whatever the capacitor thing, is not actually the Tesla coil, but you know, like somebody took a piece of a miniature version of stuff in Frankenstein's lab and stuck it on the end of a pistol.
That's a good way of describing it. It's not that Flash Gordon gun where it has like the big satellite on the front of it.
And he went
a step further and introduced lightsabers.
Yes.
It's like, oh my gosh. It's so you take it for granted now because they've been around all these years, but lightsabers, that was a whole new concept.
I know, your brain explodes the second. And what's brilliant there is they used a very compelling theatrical trick, and that is the what I would call sort of the mild reveal, is that when you're going to build to something bigger, you start out with a mild reveal. It's often how on stage nudity and sexuality is portrayed. There, I've never seen a production of it, but I understand, like in the stage play Equus, there's a scene where it's essentially the two principal characters having a lovemaking scene, but they don't really, you know, act anything out. But as I understand, what they do is very subtly just have the two characters undress during the course of whatever dialogue. And so it's just sort of this easing you into this idea. And in a strange sort of way, you know, I don't think anybody ever would have expected to connect Equus and Star Wars. especially mainly because they had to do their production with Tauntauns. Is Tauntaun! This show just got a lot weirder.
Oh, wow.
I think, Eddie, had you not had a lot of history with the sort of things I will come up with, you probably...
The Jedi Cole universe at large, yes.
I'm surprised you actually did agree to do this show.
I'm just surprised it took you 35 minutes to get to that point.
You have listened to a lot of my work. Is that the having the lightsaber be introduced as, oh, by the way, Dad wanted me to give you this.
Yeah.
And apart from, looking right down the business end like a complete idiot.
Uh-huh.
And maybe this is when Luke figured out, huh, I bet this is not the best way to be handling this.
Yeah, you could chop off a hand with that. Oops.
Or just pretty much impale your entire head on it because you're looking down the barrel as it is. But to have Luke sort of turn it on, casually mess around with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do kind of like in the Flintstones to save money where they would like have one character talking and the other just sort of looking. And the one that was looking was the only one on screen, so they didn't have to animate the other one talking.
Mm-hmm.
As you might, do some coverage of Ben or the droids and you're...
Yeah.
You already spent the money to reveal what that sound means.
Thank you for ruining Flintstones for me. Now I'm going to be watching Flintstones and thinking, oh, they were just trying to be cheap and not trying to animate as much.
Yeah, I never ruined the Flintstones.
I never noticed that until now.
That's also why Fred and Barney's houses were like the TARDIS. They just, if there was a chase scene, those things were like a shotgun house that was 5 miles long. But, by giving you a very subtle reveal of the lightsaber, then it's all the more exciting when Ben and Vader whip theirs out and go to town.
Yeah.
Because you've already had time to mentally digest the idea, that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that exists in this universe. That is so cool. And I think one of the other things that, going back to the weaponry, the conventional, the pistol type and rifle type weaponry, was the vernacular, the terminology where, Han, you've already seen the blasters at work, and then Han refers to it as a blaster. Suddenly the ray gun graduated up to being a piece of conventional ordnance.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just made it that much cooler. Plus, in that moment, I didn't realize. It was, of course, many years later, and many articles in Starlog and Famous Monsters that was your only resource back then, is you find out that all of this weaponry looks so cool because it's made of the real article.
Yeah, yeah.
They took broom handle Mausers from World War II, which I remember back when Star Wars came out, of course, that's all you ever wanted to do with Star Wars. Any kind of role play at all. And as a wannabe filmmaker in my youth, everything I wrote, everything I thought of was just ripoffs of Star Wars.
You wrote the script of Star Battle?
Star Worlds.
Star
Wars. Star World. Oh, yeah. I wasn't, no, it just, it was very derivative.
I think Vic, I'm going to call Vic out on this one. I think he, as a kid, wrote a script that I found one time. And it was named Celestial Wars.
Nice.
So, anyways.
Yeah, a friend of my older brother one time was showing us some drawings, and he had a big Death Star-looking thing he called a moon ship, and he claimed it predated Star Wars. It may well have. Because there was nothing about it that, other than it being spherical, that was all that Death Star-like.
Yeah, yeah.
So it actually could have been. And, of course, it had a lot of those little hatches, like on the Nautilus or something, that, it says all those little sharp points that all come together in the middle.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what you call those Oculus type of doors that just seem like the most dangerous way to close off. Close something off all around it. So, in that way, it was definitely a sensibility that predated Star Wars. But, you had things that never existed. And of course the Death Star, that's a great example of another thing. You're 90 minutes or an hour or 2 hours of just having your mind blown by concepts. The Sandcrawler.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I freaked out. I was a little disappointed years later when I found out that was a miniature that you saw cruising through the desert.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But it certainly didn't come across like, it wasn't like the tanks in Godzilla.
But you're right. Everything was so well thought out. They didn't follow any of the conventions of the sci-fi movie because before then, before Star Wars, everything was sanitized and clean and looked brand new. Star Wars was broken down and dirty and, you know, on its last leg.
Yeah,
the characters all wore the same uniform. They all had the one-piece jumpsuit. And, you know, no two characters looked alike in Star Wars.
Exactly.
Well, except for the stormtroopers, like, obviously.
And, you know, and they wore clothes appropriate to their character.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Han is a smuggler. He's got to exude a certain degree of cool, but he's also got to, you know, have a certain degree of efficiency to his attire.
Yeah,
it's got to be something comfortable that you can, whatever situation you find yourself in, from making out in the cantina in a cut scene, fleeing the authorities, smuggling yourself, as it were, you know. or in everything in between, you know, you never know what he and Chewie had been up to. Chewbacca, for one thing, for the first time, you had a principal supporting character who wore no pants
or spoke no lines.
Yeah.
Him and R2-D2. You had two characters who spoke no lines through the movie, yet you fell in love with both of them.
Oh yes, and absolutely. And what's brilliant about that is, with R2, you have 3PO, who you establish is a translator. And oftentimes he translates to others what R2's saying.
Yeah.
And so it makes a sort of a kind of sense of, like, you know, you might see a character in a movie who's from a foreign country who's hanging around with somebody who speaks that language and English or whatever the other language might be. And you get that sort of translation. So the audience has an outlet to get to what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Chewbacca and Han. And therein was one of the other really great strengths of this, because with Han and Chewie, everything is inference. And for the first time, you have a sense of, and to a certain degree with R2 as well, but, you know, you could argue away that R2 could translate anything that was said to him. He'd kind of have to.
Mm-hmm.
So if, you know, a human says something to him, the human can't necessarily understand if he makes a remark back. But he's got to be able to understand what is said to him as a service machine.
Yeah.
But in Chewbacca's case, what was fascinating is he and Han understand each other's language, but neither can speak each other's language.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to look at it that way, it changes the whole dynamic. And all of a sudden you start to realize, that is amazing.
Yeah, without the use of a universal translator, no doubt.
But to me, it always just suggested that Han, that there was the possibility that you could understand a language that you didn't speak. And
yeah.
It would be so commonplace in a universe where hundreds of thousands of languages might be spoken.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, that would necessitate things like having machines that translate for you. But I just personally love the idea, the concept that was imparted there, is that through no means other than just having the knowledge of what means.
Yeah.
But then you can reply, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, anybody else is like, what does he know he's talking about? But the idea that it would be like patently impossible for Chewie to ever speak Han's language. English, Interlac, Corellian, call it what you will. It's English coming off the screen, so that's what we're going to go with. And it would be impossible for Han to effectively speak Wookiee. But they can converse fluently with each other in their own language and understand what the other is saying perfectly without any miscommunication whatsoever. And that is just unheard of. There's always having to be some device, some explanation as to why that's possible.
And they're like,
there doesn't need to be. You take it as read. They've always been able to communicate.
It just is.
It just is. And of course, the other thing I was talking about, the two greatest strengths of this, you have this well-developed universe. The other greatest strength, and this is what sets Star Wars apart from everything that had ever come before, and I'm sure there are people who probably read extensively in literature who would correct me on this, but I'm talking about like on-screen sci-fi involving anything remotely taking place in space with other planets and alien races, etc. For the first time, someone made a conscious effort to say, number one, Earth has nothing to do with this at all.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's kind of a little silly pet peeve of mine is that I've talked about before is that the when people talk about Star Wars, the Star Wars future. And that's why the very first thing you see underscores everything, the strongest, the biggest pillar of the strength of Star Wars is that very first sentence, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And mm-hmm, so many people mm-hmm. miss out on the idea that what this is telling you is this isn't just someplace so remote that Earth has nothing to do with it. This is also the past.
Yes.
This isn't the future. This isn't even the future of this universe.
Mm-hmm.
This is ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
Luke and Leia and Darth Vader, even Anakin and Qui-Gon.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are like in their own universe, have been dead for thousands of years. This is like Minos of Crete or.
Well, it's funny you bring this up and something just popped into my head that I hadn't thought about in years. But I remember growing up as a kid and always, you know, studying the Bible and going to Sunday school and learning all these biblical stories. That was one of the main things is this has already happened. This is all the past. Everything that you're learning about in the Bible has already happened. These people are long dead. And I remember thinking that was one of the things that I got from Star Wars was like when it a long time ago, that's what threw me off because you see the commercials and you're thinking it's a futuristic movie. Exactly. And that threw me off and that immediately made that connection. I was like, oh my gosh, this is not, I'm not saying it's on the same par as the Bible.
No, absolutely.
But it's like,
no, we're not like the Beatles here. Please don't.
Yeah. But in my mind, in my juvenile mind, I thought, oh my gosh, that's another aspect of the Star Wars movie that made it so awesome was that this is a story that has already happened. It has already concluded, and now we can look at it and learn from it.
You
know,
in fact, you bring an interesting angle to it because that I've never really thought about it from that aspect of like, you know, the history and the names that are passed down from the ages in that way. Because oftentimes I remember, especially back in 77, 78, there was a lot written about people, you know, trying to draw an analog between Star Wars and biblical and theology, basically.
Uh-huh.
And there's a certain degree of that, and that's why it falls, you know, brilliantly into Joseph Campbell. That's why. It was very easy for Joseph Campbell
to cite
Star Wars as being the modern mythology.
Oh, okay.
And because especially back then there were, I remember.
You said Joseph Campbell. I went Joseph Smith. And I was like in the Book of Mormon. My bad.
How did those two
ignore
compare?
What I said a second ago. It's late and I'm tired.
I don't remember that being a doctrine.
What does that have to do with what I'm talking about?
But the interesting thing was that I remember buying a book at the A&P. Yeah, there's another name from the past, which was a grocery store you can Google, that was The Force of Star Wars. And they had a close-up of Luke from the Hildebrandt image.
Uh-huh.
So I buy this book, and then it turns out to be a kind of an essay almost, a study trying to draw comparison between aspects of Star Wars and aspects of the Bible and aspects of theology.
Mm.
And, you know, it was, I'd like to get a copy of it now, but I can't seem to find any hint that it ever existed. Because I'm sure it would be an interesting read.
That would be interesting.
But at 12 or 13, it was not.
Yeah.
So that unfortunately is long gone from my collection. So I kind of lament that today. But it does stand as something that illustrates part of that phenomenon and what things were like back then. Because people were trying to figure out, this had never happened before. No movie had ever spoken to so many people in so many different ways and, you know, been that approachable to so many different angles of moviegoer. And I think it was that sort of immersive world and that sort of the sense that you just had to keep going back to figure out what you missed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, another thing I like to bring up when we go back and kick it old school and look at the first time you ever saw Star Wars. Way back in my VaderCast days, I tried to start a segment called Say What? And what the idea was is I would just take a few minutes to talk about things in the Star Wars movie that were misheard that were sort of like your one-ton tomatoes and excuse me while I kiss this guy sort of lyric mishearings.
Yeah, yeah.
From Star Wars, and, you know, the earliest one I remember is Let the Monkey Win. Because the word Wookiee is only uttered one time in Star Wars.
Oh, is it really?
Yes. Let the Wookiee win. No, twice, because he says Wookiees.
Well, oh, it's in the same, yeah, the it's same, in the same conversation.
It's effectively, you know, you only get one shot at that, and then it's never brought up again. And somehow between Let the Monkey Win and Han saying Wookiee, it wasn't until there was a Famous Monsters published a Star Wars Spectacular, which is the first resource I ever found with lots of stuff about Star Wars and nothing else.
Uh-huh.
That there was a picture of Chewie and it said Chewbacca the Wookiee. I'm like, let the Wookiee win.
The light bulb went off in your head. Oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
That's okay. If it makes you feel any better, when I first saw Chewbacca in the cantina, my cryptozoology mind, I immediately thought, oh my gosh, they have a Bigfoot in this movie.
Wow, they got the Boggy Creek Monster.
Yeah.
I think the Legend of Boggy Creek had come out about that time.
What a crossover.
Exactly. But then the only other one I can really remember specifically from Star Wars that bugged me was there'll be no understoppers this time. Because I couldn't figure out what an understopper was. I don't even have the album that had like actual dialogue cracks on it. And I listened to that again and again and again. Like, what is Vader talking about? What are understoppers? And, of course, it was many years later that I finally pieced together, there will be no one to stop us this time. My quest for what understoppers are.
You could just Google it back
then. Apparently there truly were no understoppers at all.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, Google understoppers if you're curious. It probably should come out to be something you really don't want to know, so don't look for that, actually.
Yeah,
don't.
You know, you talk about that particular scene where Vader utters that that line. And as a kid, I remember that, just rewinding just a bit. A lot of people talk about the first smack in the face from Star Wars was the Star Destroyer flying overhead. Well, for me as a kid, it was when that bulkhead, the door blew open and the stormtroopers followed through. And if that wasn't just like, oh my gosh, what is this? You know, if that wasn't enough, when Vader steps through, that's when I was, like, hooked. I was...
Oh, I know. Well, that whole opening sequence is just like a slapping machine.
And I realized, I almost want to say it was one of my sisters nudged me after that opening battle scene was over, because I realized I was holding my breath. I was, like, leaning forward and holding my breath, thinking, oh, my gosh. And then she just kind of, like, tapped me, like, as if to say, hey, are you okay there?
Leave!
But that's how enveloped I was in that opening sequence. And you know, you had no clue who Darth Vader was. You had no clue who he was going to become. And he sure as heck wasn't a whiny Jake Lloyd at that point. But
unfortunately, that's for another episode.
But man, just the image, that powerful sequence of him stepping through, around, you knew this guy was not to be messed with.
Exactly. Well, you had so many elements that made that sold that so subtly and so perfectly, because you have his presence. You have him towering above the troops.
Mm-hmm.
You have that wonderful sharp contrast between their white armor and his black armor and leather. And you have that raspy, incessant breathing that's going on even behind his dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the machine is doing the breathing or the circulating the air independently of his breathing.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, this Darth Vader breathing wasn't even breathing. It was a respirator circulating air, because he's actually talking and breathing, you know, and that sound is going on simultaneously.
Yeah.
You know, that in itself was a really clever approach.
Yeah.
And then you have that wonderful lilt in John Williams' score when he walks in. It just, you know, it's like that last punch to the face after you've been pretty well pummeled.
Yeah. And I remember as a kid thinking, you know, because at that point, again, I went into Star Wars completely not expecting anything, because just being 4 years old, it's not like I'm looking through magazines and looking at the commercials and understanding it. But I remember seeing the blockade runner troopers, you know, running for their lives and retreating. And I remember distinctly just being terrified for them. thinking, oh my gosh, run, get away, you know, they're going to kill y'all. And you're thinking, and as they're falling, and you're thinking, you don't know if these are, you know, as they're all waiting for the troopers to come through and start firing, you're thinking these are the characters that are going to be in the movie.
Exactly.
But instead, they start dropping like flies, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they're killing the good guys. What's the movie going to be about if these guys are going to be dead? You know,
that's an interesting insight. I like that.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like I was completely immersed because not just because of one or two elements of the movie, but just the whole package just drew me in. You know, it was just.
And I think that is a really good thing because unfortunately we're coming up on our hour. And that's a good place to sort of draw ourselves to a close is how that you were just everything about it. They needed to sell Star Wars. You had to be drawn in from the outset. And that's a very good way to put that because it did draw you in. And all of a sudden you're just like, okay, I'm going to put my brain on the Star Wars raft and let it drift where it's going to go. I'm going to follow this tide.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think with that, I'm certain that, like me, you can go on for the rest of the night on just this one topic alone. And that's going to really be the difficult thing with this show.
Well, I know, and that's the thing about just this movie about Star Wars A New Hope is we haven't even scratched the surface of the movie itself. You know, there's just so much in the movie that we haven't covered tonight in just an hour. And you can't.
Well, that luckily is what one of the things I need to bring up is the Rancor Pit initially because I'm so thoroughly entrenched in podcasting these days. This will be a bi-monthly show. So I want to put that up out front is that Eddie and I will be bringing you our Star Wars musings every other week. We have at present 7 episodes slated. And I think we added an 8th tonight in the pre-show discussions at the very least, with many more to come. So once this airs, ideally, if everything goes to plan, I will actually be editing the 3rd episode. Mm-hmm. And so every other week, we're going to be bringing you some pretty amazing stuff that just off the top of our heads. Much like with Hey Kids Comics, we're going to bring in a guest every now and again because there are some topics where there are people we need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And we may do that as early as the 2nd episode, because I have someone I would love to get on the show if I can. So with that, I think we need to go ahead and conclude this. I have no doubt in my mind we will be exploring this very topic again, because we lost a little time in introductions and everything. We are definitely going to be talking in a few weeks, in about a month, about what followed Star Wars, or what would become A New Hope. So we'll touch a little on that and then jump right into Empire and Jedi.
Yeah.
And in 2 weeks, Eddie and I will be back with something that's very dear to us both. That's when the wonderful world of the fact that you could take Star Wars home with you in the form of collectibles and trash cans. And
let the wonder of childhood begin.
Yes.
Because I have many a story to tell about the merchandising of Star Wars.
And that in itself is yet another phenomenon.
Uh-huh.
So it's a good place to jump to next. So much as Andrew did with Hey Kids Comics, I'm going to struggle with coming up with some sort of exit line.
Well, we'd also would like feedback. If anybody's got feedback on the show, or just if you want to chime in or share your own stories about Star Wars, Cole, where can they email that?
Good idea. This is why I need other people on these shows, because I'll forget the basics here. You can write to me at JediCole@yahoo.com. Just put the Rancor Pit in the title of in the subject line, so I'll know not to send you to spam.
And feel free to email me at eddiemedina@hotmail.com. Again, if you can put Rancor Pit or something Star Wars related in the subject line, so I can pick it out of the 500 emails that usually drop into my inbox a day.
And speaking of Eddie Medina, where do we find Eddie Medina online?
Online, you go to americasmostwanted.com, and I'm usually in number 6. No, don't do that. You can go to eddiemedina.com. That's E-D-D-I-E-M-E-D-I-N-A. EddieMedina.com, or you'd be much better off finding me on Facebook. You can search Eddie Medina, EdMedArt, EdMedArt. Because as we've joked about my website on other shows, my website's pretty archaic, and Cole has likened it to the opening of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Indiana Jones has to battle his way through tarantulas and cobwebs just to get to the good stuff. So find me on Facebook. You're better off doing that.
And like the Javito's Idol, it's worth it.
Yeah.
And unlike the Javito's Idol, it's all you have to do is push a button to get out.
Unlike Bobby Blakey, who puts down his artwork, I'm going to be a little bit more bold and say my artwork, I'm proud of it. And please check
for you.
Please check it out. I do like to make money off of my artwork, so please check it out and buy a print or two from me.
Excellent. But, of course, you can find us if you're picking us up on Podbean. You can find us at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com, where you can find also Hey Kids Comics. You can find the weekly comic strip You Are Here, which is part of the JCU Sunday Funnies every Sunday. A myriad of other things, including, since this is the Star Wars podcast, look for Jedi Justifications. So I think we've done, I have 5 or 6 of them I've published so far, and another one on the way.
And you also have some really in-depth articles over at USG, don't you?
Yes, you can also find me at the United States of Geekdom at UnitedStatesOfGeekdom.com. Poke around
go there
the articles
and look for,
you can find all kinds of stuff that I've written. I've written extensively.
Look for the article on Darth Maul.
Oh,
and
yes,
Boba Fett.
Darth Maul must die, Boba Fett must live.
Yeah.
Which is the number one viewed post on the United States of Geekdom.
For good reason, I might say.
Last I looked, over 10,000 hits, which I am stunned.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't even have to put a picture of Slave Leia on it to get those hits. It just came by other means.
So with that, we better go ahead and close up now. And I can't think of a cheesy line that I really want to be known for uttering. So at this point, we're just going to close it all now. I'm struggling here, but I think I'll be better off. I'd be less embarrassing to myself not to say something like, you know, may the force be with you or something like that. Oh, I said it now. So, we'll be back in 2 weeks, folks, with more of the Rancor Pit.
Take care, guys.